Good morning, all. The first case for argument this morning is International Union 150 versus the NLRB. Mr. Kisser.
Good morning, Your Honor, counsel. May it please the court. My name is Charles Kaiser, and I represent the petitioner in this case, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150, AFL-CIO. This case is before you this morning on petition for review, the decision and order of the National Labor Relations Board, in which the board reversed the decision of the administrative law judge in Local 150's that Terracont had violated Sections 81 and 85 of the National Labor Relations Act. Your Honor, the board's decision is not supported by the substantial evidence in the record as a whole, and it does not have a reasonable basis in law.
What do you understand the rule of law actually to be, and what do you understand the board's role in deciding how high the bar should be, essentially, for finding implicit recognition?
Your Honor, as this court recognized in its decision in Lyon and Ryan Ford, the law of the case for implicit recognition is this, and that is, once an employer reviews an offer, once a union tenders authorization cards showing a majority's support in the union, and the employer reviews those cards, and the employer thereafter concedes that indeed each one of the bargaining unit employees had signed a card, and then thereafter the employer begins to bargain with the union, then by its conduct, the employer has implicitly voluntarily recognized the union.
Right, but in this case, no one's disputing, at least as I understand it, for present purposes. I know the employer did at one point dispute this, that the cards were tendered. But the concept of bargaining here is something that's really more a term of art than a question of whether a light switch has been flipped and is on the on position or the off position. And the board has some expertise in understanding what's a conversation, what's a request for information, what's actual bargaining. And I would, I'm concerned about also, you know, how certain does the board want to be, how certain is it entitled to demand the proper characterization as bargaining as opposed to as some lesser level of conversation, because certainly we see examples of both of those in the board's case law.
That is correct, Your Honor. And in the cases that the board offers in support of its position that bargaining did not take place in this case, each and every one of those cases is flawed in a specific way. Specifically in the case that the board relies on in Edner Home Care, the board found that no bargaining took place in that case because there was credited evidence from the employer that the employer spoke with the union solely to gain information. In this case, Your Honor,
isn't that the classical kind of judgment call to which we give deference to the board, though? Whether it's that case or obviously it's this case we're worried about, but the board makes the call in the Edner Holmes case. The board's made the call here. Could have made the call the other way, perhaps, but isn't it our job to defer the way they went?
Yes, Your Honor, if the board's decision is supported by the substantial evidence in the record. And in this instance, Your Honor, the board's decision is not supported by the substantial evidence in the record. The board, in reaching its decision, decided to ignore facts that were not favorable to its position, such as Local 150 tendering to the employer the day after the events of February 19, 2001, a letter correctly summarizing the credited evidence in the case, stating that the parties had met and engaged in bargaining over various issues, and had attached to that letter a copy of the summary plan description that the employer itself had requested.
But the board gives policy reasons. I mean, I think the board was perfectly aware of that letter and the nature of the conversation. What if the board is just raising the bar? What if the board is saying, we're still going to have implicit recognition, but we want really clear evidence that it was bargaining, not conversation, I'll just call the alternative, because we don't want to discourage that kind of informal exchange between unions and employers before recognition happens. And as they point out, you know, we're afraid that if employers think that letting somebody walk through the door equals implicit recognition, the door will be slammed shut in your face.
Your Honor, if the board is raising the bar in this case, then Local 150 met the bar in this case. And the reason for that is, Your Honor, the concept of implicit voluntary recognition requires two main elements. That is, the union must present a showing of majority support. The employer reviews that support, and then the employer thereafter bargains. If those facts are not present, then an employer is free to discuss with the union. And indeed, that does happen on occasion. In a situation...
But why is this, why do we have to call this bargaining instead of something less than bargaining?
Because, Your Honor, in an industrial relationship, such as we have here, between a union and an employer, it is inconceivable that an employer, especially in the midst of an organizing campaign, would sit down and talk at length with the union over the wages, terms, and conditions of its bargaining unit employees, such as happened here. And, Your Honor, it happened twice, not just once. In this case, we have a specific, unique set of facts. You know, Local 150 was at the point at the employer in February 19, 2001, and met first with the office manager of the employer and engaged that individual in discussion, specifically by asking him if they could discuss the wages, terms, and conditions of the employers, and indeed he did. At the conclusion,
but he only does in the sense of saying, what is it that you're talking about? And he finally says, well, come back and talk to Mr. Jeffress.
Correct, and he does that in response specifically to the union's request to continue negotiations. And
what if during this conversation with Mosselman and then Jeffress, either of them, he had they went through all of what you were describing as bargaining? Say, well, you know, coveralls, insulated, we can handle that, hazmat training, hey, it's a good idea. Maybe they even talk about wages, gee, you know, there's only so much we can pay. You know, we're not, you know, otherwise we got to outsource or something. You go through all this conversation, and then at the end of the conversation, they just say, and incidentally, we don't want to bargain. Now, is that enough of a summary of that conversation? What they would just say, all this talk that's here is just talk, and yeah, we want to see where we stand and why they want to make this, why they want to unionize, and we'll take that in consideration because we don't want it. The union, and therefore we don't want to bargain. Would that end it? Would that eliminate all of this conversation that you're saying was bargaining?
Yes, Your Honor, but of course that's not what
I know it didn't happen, but I just wondered.
Yes, it would, because the state of the board's law as it relates to voluntary recognition allows an employer faced with a showing of a majority support to, at that point in time, refuse to recognize the union and insist on going to a board election. That did not happen here. Instead of refusing to recognize the union, the company on two occasions entered into fairly detailed discussions of its bargaining unit employees' wages, terms, and hours and conditions. And indeed, they actually agreed on one specific issue, and that was hazmat training.
That's done. In other words, yeah, that's done. We don't need the union. He didn't go on and say that. But it would seem that if you would say this definitive, say we do not want to bargain, would be, yeah, that would end it, and then they have to have the vote. But on the other hand, why couldn't they say, okay, we'll bargain with you? Why can't it be something more affirmative? Neither Mosselman nor Jeffress apparently had any experience with this, and when they called the lawyer, of course he set them straight, and they sent a letter, and they do other things, but. Next time they'll know, probably not the next time, they probably already had a vote, but the next time they'll know, or someone will know, or whoever reads this case would know, if we affirm that this, that you have to be a little more affirmative when you're dealing this way. In other words, you're not just back into bargaining. You either bargain or you don't.
Well, Your Honor, as this court stated in Lyon and Ryan Ford, in that case, that is still the law of this circuit, and that is the case that the ALJ in this decision specifically relied upon. An employer can implicitly recognize the union by engaging in the same course of conduct that Terracon engaged in this case. That is that Terracon reviewed authorization cards from a majority of its driller and driller helper employees. And I might add that the morning when Local 150 arrived and met Maru Musalem, 7 of the 8 bargaining unit employees were standing there wearing Local 150 hats and buttons. And thereafter, after reviewing cards from a unanimous showing of support for all the driller and driller helpers, Musalem and Jeffress began to bargain with the union in serious and substantive ways. And I see that I'm telling you my rebuttal time.
Thank you, Mr. Kaiser. Ms. Marcus?
May it please the Court. I'm Julie Marcus, representing the National Labor Relations Board, which is asking that this Court deny the union's petition for review. The Board found that the company did not violate the law because it never recognized that the union was the bargaining representative of its employees. Now, I have no intention of re-arguing the Board's brief here because I think it's pretty straightforward. What I would like to do, however, is emphasize 2 points that I think the union has overlooked and that I think will also respond to some of the questions that you've already asked. The first point is this. The union has a very high burden to overcome here, and that is that they need to prove that the totality of the evidence actually compelled the Board to find that the company recognized the union.
But, you know, it seems to me we are focusing on the second of those 2 aspects of implicit recognition. It's not the show of majority support. The Board doesn't seem to be that worried about that, and I don't think we should either for these purposes. It's whether these sets of conversations cross the line from something more preliminary to actual bargaining. And I would actually myself focus it even further to the conversations with Mr. Jeffress, because I think the Board reasonably could have assumed that the conversations with Mr. Musalem were of a more preliminary nature. But there are a couple of things that happen in the conversation with Mr. Jeffress that are hard to understand if this wasn't bargaining. I would highlight 2, really. First, the Local 150 insurance program and the discussion of substituting that for the employers. And secondly, this morale, lateness, cell phone use, and so on, and the union's progressive discipline system. And you could also throw in there the request of the union to hire a professional engineer. It doesn't sound like the company was just sitting there listening and asking questions and eliciting information. That I could certainly see as preliminary. When the employer starts making requests as well, doesn't it turn into a 2-way process?
It may, Your Honor. What we're talking about here is implicit recognition. The key to implicit recognition is that the employer's conduct and statements must clearly and unequivocally establish a commitment to bargain or actual bargaining.
But if they are, in fact, making demands, I'm trying to separate kind of passive activity on their part, just getting as much information as they can about these people who've just walked in the door at 5:30 in the morning or whatever it was, versus sitting down and saying, this is what we want from you. I mean, that's when, however they may wish to characterize it, something that looks like bargaining might be happening.
That could be one interpretation, Your Honor. The Board, however, did not see that as demands. They looked at the entire situation here, the union showing up on the company's doorstep and saying the employees have some concerns, here's what they are, and the employer's response, in essence, the Board saw as merely informational to see, well, if we were to recognize the union, what's in it for us? What would we get out of that? And that's a perfectly legitimate informational query to make, according to the Board.
Who makes that determination? Because if you went through this, what sounds like getting information, if I'm sitting there and I'm saying, well, gee, what do they want? Why would they want a union? And then they go through a whole list and say this, that, and the other thing, and he goes through the same thing Jeffers did. Is it just the ALJ and then the board that says, is it kind of subjective? Did they say, well, yeah, I think in this case that sounds more like bargaining than just gathering information? Whereas someone else could look at the same set of facts and say, looks like gathering information to me. There was no unequivocal agreement. So how do we draw a line?
Well, to draw the line, I think we need to look at something else that the union has overlooked here, which is the practical implications of the position that the union is espousing here.
The practical what?
The practical implications
of
what the union is espousing. The union is entirely correct that the Act favors voluntary recognition. What the union is espousing, however, and company counsel in its brief, I think, appropriately referred to this as the gotcha form of recognition, this would have a chilling effect on voluntary recognition. As Your Honor pointed out, employers would be afraid to say good morning to a union representative. They would effectively bar the door. Some of these employers might have, upon hearing out the union representative, might have voluntarily recognized the union. Now that first hearing will never occur because the employers are going to become quite cautious, bar the door. Clearly, this is not something that the Act endorses. This instead chills that voluntary recognition, which is favorable. If the court has no further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Marcus. Mr. Darch?
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, Douglas Darch appearing on behalf of Terracon. I do think that the focus of this case should be at the board's decision on page 5, where it talks about the policy underlying the Act and its attempt to effectuate that policy. And as counsel for the NLRB explained, and you have recognized through your questioning, the policy is we want to allow for voluntary recognition. And developing what we've referred to in our brief as a got you theory of recognition will inhibit that. Now, the board is the agency charged with effectuating the national labor policy. It has made that decision. It has made that decision in this case by saying that there are two ways to look at what happened. And as you have correctly identified, there is one way to look at the conversation that ensued, and then and that is, what is in this for us? What are we getting ourselves into were we to recognize the union? And Judge Mannion, you said that after hearing that information, you questioned counsel about this, after hearing that information, would the employer be free to say, we're not going to recognize you? And union counsel said, if that occurred at the end of the conversation, we agree voluntary recognition would not have occurred.
But Mr. Darch, the thing that's troubling is that hypothetical, which just in some ways clarifies things, is all in the context of express recognition or express statement not to recognize. And it's trickier to find some kind of objective standard for implicit recognition or non-recognition, and I'm worried that your position pretty much reads implicit recognition out of the book.
Well, let me say, Your Honor, when we appeared before the board, we argued that the cases had...
I didn't remember, yes.
Had removed...
The board said, no, we haven't.
Right, and the board has said, no, we haven't. But it still appears to me that in implicit recognition, there must be some activity which indicates that there is this voluntary, which means knowing and intentional. And in this case...
But what's bargaining? Yes, knowing and intentional, but a knowing and intentional conversation or knowing... What is it that crosses this magical line over into bargaining?
All right. Well, I am in the unenviable position of having the entire employer community hope I lose this case, because if what happened here constitutes bargaining, then an employer will never fail to bargain about plant closings, a variety of other issues which the board has held. There is a high standard for bargaining. There must be regular meetings. There must be proposals. There must be give and take. None of that occurred in this case. What happened was Jeffers, after hearing the union's complaint, remember, he did not ask for those complaints. The union volunteered them. He then says, what's in it for us? We've got these problems. What can you do? Now, when you have bargaining, there are two parties to it. Each one comes to the table from a different perspective. The union wants certain things. The employer wants certain things. When the employer comes, if it's permissible for the union to say, here's what we want, and that's not bargaining, why then is there a different rule when the employer says, here's what we want? There shouldn't be any. If after that conversation, you then have the exchange, in other words, the union concedes this point, the employer concedes this point, or there's actually, okay, we agree, we can move forward to the next issue now, let's see if we can resolve that issue, that would be bargaining. But merely exploring, here's what we would want out of this relationship, to me, the fact that it happens with permission, and the union apparently concedes this, is permissible and there's no bargaining, there should not be another rule that applies to the employer which says, but employer, if you open your mouth, then you've engaged in bargaining, because that's essentially what the rule would be if the case here were reversed.
Well,
the
employer another way of putting it is if it became interactive, it would be bargaining, as long as it's simply the union describing, you know, here's who we are, here's why we're here.
Right.
Then it's not an interactive process. It seems like it's fairly easy at that point to say it's not bargaining. It's merely a presentation, if you will.
Right.
But there may be a difference between the interactive. It sounds to me from your description, though, as long as people stick to the subjunctive mood in their
right.
in their statements, and they use the word would instead of this is what we must have or something, then they're fine.
I think that would be a valid, because of the ambiguity, that would be a valid distinction with respect to what happens here. I think, though, when we end up with this, there needs to be some clear line, and the board has struck that line. It has said it's got to be clear, express, and unequivocal. And when it says that, it must allow for the employer to speak as well. You cannot develop a rule that says the union gets to talk, the employer cannot. And the minute the employer opens its mouth and responds, you have the clear, express, and unequivocal language. Yeah, I mean, there's some illogic in saying that an employer, who during the course of the meeting says, we're not going to bargain with you, but if the union gets in here, we're out of here. We're closing down this operation and we're subcontracting, and saying that somehow or other, in spite of that clear statement of animus, it nonetheless agreed to recognize the union and to let them into its business. There's an illogical response, and I think it goes to your question, Judge Mannion. What needs to be said at the end of the conversation to cut off anything an expectation in the union that, in fact, recognition occurred? Now, it wasn't the magic words that you formulated, we don't consider this bargaining. Instead, it was, if the union gets in here, we're gone. We're closing down. We're going to subcontract this operation. And that, to me, is the antithesis of voluntarily entering into an arrangement with the union. So I would say that the employer met the test, though in different words than what you've posited.
Is that the test? Is that the test that has to be to distinguish implicit versus express?
Well,
because that's closer to express, isn't it?
We're not recognizing you. I would say it does cross over to express, but counsel for the union was willing to concede your point or the point in response to your question, and I think given that concession. The
facts of this case are expressed, huh?
Yes, sir. We're going to close down if the union gets in here. I have no further questions.
Mr. Darch, at the second meeting.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Jeffers does specifically address pay increase questions, right?
his statement is, if the union, if the company were obligated to pay the union scale, it would be forced out of business. It would subcontract the operation.
He did not make an inquiry on what pay increase the union was specifically seeking?
No, sir, I do not believe he did.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Judge. Mr. Kaiser. Mr. Kaiser, at the initial meeting where Mr. Simray and Mr. Edwards introduced themselves as union organizers?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Did they introduce Mr. Edwards as an attorney as well? Did Mr. Jeffers, Mr. Russellin know that he was speaking to a union attorney as well as a union organizer? I don't suggest you can't wear two hats, but I'm just, for the, any issue to me of formality and whether or not it's, well, let's just say issue of formality. Was there an indication that Mr. Edwards was an attorney?
Your Honor, I believe perhaps not that Mr. Edwards didn't verbally identify himself that way, but I believe business cards were exchanged.
And that carried the identifying
that is correct.
That he was an attorney?
That would be correct.
And that was initially given the card, or is that the end of the meeting, do you recall? Or is maybe the record doesn't reflect that?
I'm not sure that the record reflects.
Okay. Thank you.
And Mr. Kaiser, I wondered how you would respond to this. The board and, of course, also Terracon have stressed this standard that the evidence of actual bargaining has to be clear, express, and unequivocal. And my question for you is whether you agree that that is, in fact, the correct standard, and if it is the standard, how can you say that it's met here?
Your Honor, we did not argue in our brief that the standard here is not that it has to be clear and unequivocal.
So you agree that clear, express, and unequivocal standard of the board, the phrase that the board has used, is the correct standard for us to look at?
Your Honor, I would agree that that is the correct standard, and I would state that we met it in this instance.
Okay.
Because of the conduct that Mr. Jeffers, well, Mr. Musallam engaged in initially, and then Mr. Jeffers engaged in thereafter.
Clear and unequivocal, I mean to say. Clear and unequivocal
clear and
agreement by the employer to recognize.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah.
And in this instance, when Mr. Jeffers and Mr. Simray engaged in the lengthy back and forth give and take that they did, that is clearly and unequivocally bargaining conduct. Not only did the union here say this is what the employee's grievances were, the company asked what the union could do for it. And not only just in a way that it was gathering information, asked specifically about the union's health care program, asked that the union provide it with information on its health care program, volunteered the cost of what it was paying per hour for employee, $3.55 an hour. In the midst of an organizing campaign, that is not information that you would volunteer to the union who's organizing your employees if you hadn't already made the decision to recognize the union.
What did you say that hourly figure was?
$3.55 an hour. That Terracon, through Jeffers, volunteered that was the rate of pay that they were paying for their insurance coverage. And obviously that was quite high. He was wondering if the union perhaps had a better deal for him. I would like to address real quickly this notion that this is somehow the gotcha way of going about getting voluntary recognition. The decision in Local 150's favor in this case would not chill voluntary recognition in any way. It would not chill implicit voluntary recognition, simply because, as this court has recognized here today, after reviewing the show of majority support, the company can say, we refuse to bargain. Thereafter, the union's on notice, they're not bargaining. The company then can ask for information. The company, by asking for that information, isn't risking voluntary recognition at that point. The law of implicit voluntary recognition states that if you review the cards and especially concede that each one of these employees wants the union, and then you engage in a course of bargaining, then you have implicitly recognized the union.
Mr. Kaiser, was there any contact prior to February 19th seeking a meeting, or is this just a show up on the 19th and make the request and get the audience on that day?
It was solely on began on February 19, 2001.
And that, in seeking voluntary recognition, and are the facts of cases that you've examined indicate that that's usually the fact pattern, that it's triggered by that kind of appearance, as opposed to, let's say, just the two individuals who did eventually engage in the first meeting calling and asking for a meeting with management?
It can often occur the way that it did here, Your Honor. I see that my time is up. Local 150 respectfully asks this court to reverse the board's decision and adopt the ALJ's findings.
Thank you, Mr. Kaiser, and our thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.